the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, we have a new president in the United States. He's talking about fixing Obamacare and fixing other things in the economy. But there are bigger issues that are involved here that aren't being addressed, and that is Medicare and Social Security. Joining me on the program is Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff from Boston University. And Professor, you and I have had this discussion, and you've written extensively about Social Security and Medicare. Let's talk about that, because almost 70% of the government's budget goes to entitlements and interest on the debt. That doesn't leave much for anything else. So sooner or later, with 10,000 baby boomers retiring daily, we're going to have to address those two issues, and you have a possible solution.
Yeah, the country taken as a whole is entirely broke. We have bills coming out the wazoo to pay in the future. So what economists say we should do, and what we actually do in practice, is to put all these future obligations onto the books, no matter whether they are called official liabilities or unofficial liabilities. You know, the Social Security check my mom gets every month, she's 97, she gets about $2,000 a month. You know, that's not an official liability, yet the government's paying it every month and will until she passes away. All those Social Security benefits that are obligated to be paid to baby boomers, they're going to get paid. The Medicare benefits, the Medicaid benefits. So all those obligations are there, but they're not recorded as official debt, even though politically it would be much more difficult to cancel those debts or renege on those debts, default on those debts, than it would be to default on official debt. So I think we need to put everything onto the books when you do that. And now I'm not talking just about the transfer programs, but including Obamacare, and there's a medical program for children called CHIPS, but there's also food stamps, welfare benefits, but there's also defense spending. There's the other side of expenditures, which are direct government purchases of goods and services. Paying for the president's lunch is discretionary spending by the federal government. That has to be included. So you project all these expenditures, you figure out the present value, and then you add in the official debt, and that's the present value of all the expenses the government has to pay. And then you compare that with the present value of all the taxes that the government's projected to receive. The difference is called the fiscal gap. That's $206 trillion right now. The official debt is only about $20 trillion. That's the gross debt in the hands of the public. So what we're talking about here is that the true debt of the country is 10 times larger than the debt numbers that people down in Washington are talking about. So we're 10 times more broke than people think. So we have to fix things in a major way. We can't do piecemeal reform. We have to fix Social Security from the ground up, because Social Security is broke on its own, 32% underfinanced. It has about a $33 trillion unfunded liability. So part of the $206 trillion fiscal gap, $33 trillion of it is Social Security. Medicare and the rest of the healthcare system also has a huge fiscal gap. And we have to fix Medicare, Obamacare, employer-based healthcare, Medicaid, by getting rid of all four of those programs and starting from scratch. I'm calling for a Medicare Part C program for all, which I think is the right thing, because the government could keep control. It's a Republican part of Medicare, and it coincides with what Bernie Sanders has been advocating, which is Medicare for all. It would just be Medicare Part C for all, and it would get a very efficient healthcare system in place for all Americans. So we need to fix our healthcare system from ground up. We need to fix our Social Security system by freezing the existing system, setting up a no system for current workers, paying off what we owe under the old system, but letting people contribute to a new fully funded system at the margin. We need to fix our tax system dramatically, and we need to fix our banking system and education system and immigration system. So all these things have to be done in concert. It's not that you can kind of just go off and fix Obamacare and call it a day or call it an administration. That's not going to work, because we need to have everybody in one big insurance pool for our insurance system to work. You can't have healthy workers off getting much better coverage at a cheaper price and then expect the individual market to work well on its own. It really only makes sense to have a national system, but that doesn't mean national provision. You know, it doesn't mean a British system where they hire the doctors, or the government hires the doctors and owns the hospitals and micromanages everything. We can have private provision just like we now have and just have the government provide a basic plan for everybody. That's Medicare Part C for all. And about a third of Medicare participants are in Medicare Part C. You just choose an insurance company and the government sends the insurance company a payment for taking care of you. There's co-pays. But basically, the insurance company gets a check based on your pre-existing condition. So they don't have any incentive to try and cherry pick away from taking you. They can't turn you down, but also they don't want to because they're being compensated for your extra costs or extra expected costs. And then they're on the hook for the year for covering your costs, and they have all the incentives right for not over-providing care, but also not under-providing care because they want you back as a customer because they can make a profit. So we can have a highly competitive Medicare Part C for all system and get our fiscal gap down probably in half just by that. Fixing Social Security can probably reduce it by another third if we do it the right way. And then if we have an efficient tax system that I'm proposing, you know, we can get rid of the fiscal gap entirely. So there is an answer. It's just we can't expect that answer to be coming from politicians because they're just not thinking out of the box. And you need to think out of the box when you're bankrupt.
Professor, given that individuals like yourself and even certain politicians like Bernie Sanders have suggested fixing the system, what is it about Washington that it takes a crisis to fix things? For example, in, I believe it was 1984, there was a fix put in for Social Security. And I think in the Clinton administration, something was done as well. Why are politicians reluctant when they know this hangs over their heads that somewhere down the road, there's going to be a crisis if nothing's done?
Well, they're just trying to get to the next election. They don't really give a damn about the next generation, as far as I can tell. I think our country is basically very selfish. If we personally have it good, we're not that concerned with other people. We view them as losers and not somebody that we need to take care of. But all of America's children are our own children. So we have to think of this as in the role of being adults, responsible adults, and live up to our obligations as adults, which is not to bankrupt our children, because the way things are going, they're going to face astronomical taxes and they're going to leave the country. You know, this has happened in other countries that have run up enormous bills and ultimately had to raise taxes sky high. If you look at Uruguay, they had a massive exodus in the 1990s. 500,000 people left that small country to Spain and other countries because the taxes were too high. Nobody could make a living and nobody wanted to invest in that country because no company wanted to be kind of expropriated by coming in and making some money and then having it taxed away. So this is the result of 6 decades of running what's a Ponzi scheme, which is you take from the young people, you give it to the old people, you tell the young people not to worry, they're going to get theirs in the future. And what you do is you take the money from young people and call it taxes, and then you promise transfer payments. And by calling it taxes and transfer payments, the obligation to make those transfer payments is not an official debt, so it doesn't show up on the books. So the politicians have been using language to keep the $206 trillion fiscal gap mostly off the books and only report $20 trillion. So what is it about American politicians that is leading them not to act responsibly, as happens in other countries like Norway and Sweden and Denmark and Finland and Chile and Australia and New Zealand? I think it's a reflection of the selfishness of our society, that we don't seem to really care about our children. We're very much a melting pot, so we see children that don't look like us or don't look like our children, and therefore we conclude that it's not our obligation to take care of them, but it is. And if we all adapt that selfish reasoning, we'll continue to keep kind of free riding on our kids, expanding benefits to older people, leaving the bills for younger people, disguising them, hiding them, and then the whole thing will blow up. You know, if you go back to 1983 when the Greenspan Commission met to fix Social Security for good, you knew back then that they weren't looking far out enough. Right now, we're looking at about 34 years that they ignored in their long-term projections back in 1983. They only looked out 75 years. Well, had they looked further into the future, they would have realized that there are huge cash flow deficits beyond the period that they were looking at. They hadn't done enough. So the system is actually in far worse shape than it was back in 1983 when the Greenspan Commission met in terms of the tax hike needed to fix things. So we've already had tax increases in retirement ages, and it's still not enough. What we're doing here is kind of operating on a slowly growing cancer. And each time we come back and revisit the cancer, it's bigger. And we operate on we take out a small chunk each time and it keeps getting bigger and bigger through time, and in the end, it's going to kill an organ and then kill the patient. So this is why we can't afford things like fixing the potholes in the roads, fixing the bridges that are collapsing, investing in the National Science Foundation, why we underfund the National Endowment of the Arts, saying that a country like ours cannot provide any funding for the arts. That's part of President Trump's budget plan, as far as I understand. You know, we couldn't get Congress to pass legislation, money to really go after Zika. I don't know if they've actually done it at this point, but, you know, it's just incredible that a country that's as supposedly rich as ours can't do the simplest things. And that's because we're broke and we don't know it. So it's not like the crisis is coming 20 years or 30 years in the future. We're broke today. And all you have to do is look at the projections. You understand that the country is bankrupt. It can't cover what it has obligated to pay. So we need to adjust right now those spending commitments into the future. And we also need to raise more taxes. And we need to do it efficiently because our fiscal system, our tax system is horrendous. We have about 20 different taxation programs, like food stamps is a tax program, because if you earn too much money, you lose 28 cents on the dollar in food stamps. Obamacare, if you earn too much money, an extra dollar, you lose 15 cents on the dollar in Obamacare subsidies. The earned income tax credit, earn an extra dollar, you can lose 22 cents. So all these extra taxes, which aren't called taxes, but are taxes, give people no incentive to work when you add them all up. So we're trapping poor people into poverty by saying, look, you earn more money, we're going to take away all these benefits and also hit you with the FICA tax and the state income tax and state sales taxes, and you'll lose your Medicaid benefits, if not your Obamacare subsidy. So it's just an incredibly inane way to run an economy if you tell, you know, the vast majority of people, look, you earn more money, we're going to take away a huge chunk of it. And if you really look carefully, every income group is facing very high marginal taxation. So we've succeeded in taxing people at the margin, giving them very little incentive to work, in addition, collecting very little revenue relative to what we're spending, so that's part of being broke, and we're not collecting enough money. So we need to fix things the right way, and it can't be done by somebody who doesn't have any training in economics or public finance or knowledge about Social Security or healthcare. And that's what we have in a president. We have somebody who has no real policy understanding of anything and is flying by the seat of his pants. He has hired not a single economist so far who I would call an economist. You know, he's got a guy named Navarro who keeps saying the stupidest possible things about international trade. So it's rather depressing state of affairs.
Let me ask you this, Professor. You have proposed solutions. I mean, one of the things that we know about Americans today, we're living longer. I've read statistics that every decade we're adding 2 years to life expectancy. So people retired today at age 65 can expect to live at least 20 years into their retirement, if not longer. I know with some of the fixes they had in the past, they moved the retirement date for full retirement benefits to age 66. You know, there's simple things we can do, like moving back the retirement date, maybe to something like 68 or 69, given life expectancy. Is there any readiness in Congress, or are you getting any feedback from your plan or other plans that this needs to be fixed and they need to be working on it now?
No, and there's no comprehension of the magnitude of the tumor. You know, raising retirement age gradually from 67, where it's heading now, to, let's say, 70, is like a drop in the bucket in terms of what it will mean in terms of eliminating the fiscal gap. Fiscal gap is our nation's credit card bill. It's growing at about $6 trillion per year. That's the true size of our deficit. And the members of Congress, there's a bill that I helped write called the INFORM Act, INFORMACT, the INFORM Act. If you go to theinformact.org, you can see endorsements of this bill by lots and lots of economists and 19 Nobel Prize winners in economics. And it's a piece of legislation, a bill that was introduced in the Senate and also in the House, and only 8 senators stood up and said they would sign it. And what it does is it requires the government to report the fiscal gap honestly and say, here's the country's true indebtedness, put everything on the books, this is the situation. And we couldn't even get members of Congress to agree to tell the truth about our fiscal position. So I called the head of the CBO last year, Keith Hall, or got in touch with him about just going voluntarily publishing the fiscal gap, doing a study of it. No way. And indeed, they went beyond just refusing to do that. They stopped putting out the long-term projections that are needed to make the fiscal gap. And each of his predecessors, whether they were Democratic appointees or not, have refused to do fiscal gap accounting, even though the entire economics profession is saying, we're talking about over 1,500 top economists and 19 Nobel Prize winners and people like George Shultz. If you go to theinformact.org, everybody's saying you got to do fiscal gap accounting. The European Council does fiscal gap accounting for all the members of the European Union. We cannot get Congress to honestly report how we are damaging the economic lives of our children. So this is a slow train wreck that we see happening, but it's happening.
Does it take something? I forget the politician. I think it was James Carville said if he was to be reborn again, he'd come back as the bond market, because it seems to be the only thing that gets a politician's attention is when the bond market moves against the lack of fiscal responsibility. Is it going to take something like that to move Congress or a president to fix something?
Just imagine that the CBO put out a document saying that our true government debt is 10 times larger than we've been reporting. Well, presumably the bond traders would wake up and they would collectively see this news. They'd keep seeing it because every few months there'd be a new update of the fiscal gap, and they would adjust their trading in light of that. But that's not happening because we're being misinformed. This is a disinformation state, just like Russia produces disinformation when it comes to the truth about what's going on with their economy or the world at large. The same thing is going on in our country. We have one administration after the next that are complicit in collectively keeping the country in the dark, disguising the truth, hiding the truth, lying about the truth. And it's really despicable, but that's the reality. So there are answers for how to fix things, but things have to be fixed by professionals carefully. You can't just decide over a weekend you're going to take any old healthcare bill and try and push it through Congress and then try and appease the most extreme right-wing group of players you've got, which is the Freedom Caucus, to the point where there's no health insurance per se for real, and expect that to get through. It's just, it's not where the public is. The public wants health insurance for all, but they also don't want to go broke providing it. So you need to have answers which satisfy all the criteria, that you can pay for the thing through time and not have the costs continue to rise at rates that are not affordable, but you also give everybody a basic plan. So that's part of my Medicare Part C proposal, Medicare Part C for all proposal. The same with, you know, Social Security. We need to radically reform that and, again, freeze the existing system, start a new system that's fully funded and that's progressive. There are answers. It's just that we're not getting them.
Yeah. And usually, at least it's been my experience, Congress doesn't act until there's a crisis. What would you tell the average retiree right now who's 66 in on Social Security or 76 on Social Security? What would you tell them?
The likelihood is that if they're high income retirees, that they could see their benefits eroded through small cuts of different types, not failure to fully index the benefits for inflation, higher levels of taxation of Social Security benefits, things like that. They can expect some cutbacks because the system can't pay for what it's projected to spend.
We've already seen that with the Medicare premiums.
Yeah, the Medicare premiums, same thing. They've raised the Medicare premiums for high-income retirees. The thresholds beyond which those higher Medicare premiums kick in are not indexed for inflation, so everybody eventually will be paying those high-income Medicare premiums. Social Security benefits, the threshold beyond which 85% of your benefits are subject to taxation, that threshold is also not indexed to inflation. So eventually everybody will be paying taxes on 85% of their Social Security benefits. So we already have certain things built in that are included in the projections, but the country's still absolutely totally broke. So it's not like inflation and these nominal thresholds are going to bail us out. That's incorporated in the CBO's projections already, and the country's still short $206 trillion.
Professor, I know you've written on your blog, you have a section called Medicare C could be the answer to our health insurance. As we close, would you mind giving out your website so our listeners can listen to some of the proposals you have put forth?
Kotlikoff.net, KOTLIKOFF.net is my main website. I post all my columns and research there. There's also links to my company's software. I have a personal financial planning software company. We've got some really cool software for dealing with Social Security, dealing with divorce, dealing with lifetime financial planning. So that's a good resource for trying to keep one's own economy above water, even if the national economy is going down the tubes. But we should all expect tax hikes and benefit cuts, and we should all be saving a whole lot more than we are to try and keep ourselves safe, because Uncle Sam has us in a terrible jam.
Well, listen, Professor, I want to thank you for joining us on Lifetime Income. I want to wish you all the best and come back and talk to us again.
Oh, will do. Thank you so much.
That concludes my interview with Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff. He's written extensively on Social Security and the nation's entitlement system. We covered this a couple of years ago in 2015. The nation's disability system under Medicare would have gone broke in 2016. So they had a fix, which they borrowed from Social Security to fix it for 2016 and 2017. However, sooner or later, these problems are going to resurface, whether it's with Medicare or Social Security, just as right now we're seeing with Obamacare, a lot of the insurance companies are going off the exchanges, leaving fewer and fewer choices with 25% premium increases this year. Sooner or later, perhaps the professor's right, it'll take a crisis to fix it. The sad part is it is fixable. But for those of you in the upper income categories, just as they used to give you Social Security, it was tax-free. Then they taxed 50% of it. Then they taxed 85% of it. Look forward in the future, they could be taxing 100% of it. And just like in Medicare, depending on your income, you're going to pay a higher premium. Watch for cuts in Social Security coming to upper income individuals. Believe me, it's going to happen. In the meantime, until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.